This is gonna hurt.
It's time for the Suffering Podcast.
Society has certain expectations for what is supposed to happen when you're an adult. There is an idealistic vision that is ingrained in traditional households for what a grown-up life looks like. What is never spoken about is the gray area that lies between the black and white lines. Get married, buy a house, start a family, is what we're told a happy life is supposed to be. Very seldomly are we ever taught what to do when that vision doesn't materialize perfectly. How to handle the chaos and uncertainty when things don't go as planned. Our world is turned upside down, and we must figure out how to put the puzzle together. What once reminded us of peace and love now represents grief and pain. The strong make the best of a bad situation and carve a new path to redefine their life. I'm Kevin Donaldson here with Mike Falaise, and welcome to the Suffering Podcast. If you're a fan of overcoming adversity and overcoming suffering, then we're for you, because that's what we do here, and that's the stories we enjoy highlighting. So do me a favor, hit that like button, subscribe to the channel, please comment, and now you can join. Ring the bell so you can get notified of all of our new content, and follow us on social media so you can find out what we're up to. On tonight's episode of the Suffering Podcast, we welcome Michelle Traina to discuss the suffering of the divorce diaries. You are.
She's chuckling already.
I love it.
Well, you're the epitome of what this show's about. You make lemonade out of lemons. That's right.
You know, I mean, we had so much fun before we even started tonight.
I hope Drew got it. Before we get it started into anything, let's give a big shout out to our marquee sponsor. That's Toyota of Hackensack. We don't trust anybody as police, but we do trust them. So go to ToyotaHackensack.com. Let them find you a car. So, Michelle, each week we take a question from our audience. This week's question comes from Missy Forte. Underscores in there somewhere. What's one thing you've done to make your life better?
Divorce.
This is a layup question.
I mean, also have a kid. Really has changed. It went actually made me want to go back to the road I started on before I was married.
Yeah, but I'm sure, and I want to get into this in the episode. The entering into the dating world, it can be a hindrance. In some ways.
Yeah. I mean, I have a half-open dress right now. So that's telling you how great the dating game is going.
We do that all for ratings. That's all we do is for ratings.
As Joe Gerbiani said, how you doing?
I'm doing great.
No. Mike, what do you think? What's one thing you've done to make your life better?
You know, I'm gonna go with getting on this podcast.
Aww.
You know, it really turned my life around. You know, we went through therapy together and everything else, and therapy was working, but it wasn't until you started this podcast and asked me to come on that my life really turned around.
That's called a soundbite right there.
I love that.
That's called a soundbite. Thank you, brother. Thank you very much.
Aww. Well, couple of weeks ago, you said that one of the greatest, the things you're grateful for is me. So I had to give it.
Well, you know what it was?
Me and Kevin Spoon at night.
Yeah. So what it was right before recording, people don't know that Mike and I are like, we're like family members in a lot of different ways, in the good ways and the bad ways.
Right.
Where we will get on each other's nerves.
Yeah.
Okay. Don't think that everything's all sunshine and rainbows when, you know, when the cameras go on.
Yeah.
We do get on each other's nerves from time to time. But now moving backwards, I know how to de-escalate myself a little bit better.
Mm.
I don't know. My family will speak a different story about that. But I do know how to de-escalate myself and just step back and say, what are you doing, man? What?
You know, I mean, there's so many things that why are we even – like me and you get into wrong. What's it really all about?
I mean, I need to get de-escalated a lot.
Is it really going to change? Is it really going to change what tomorrow is going to bring? If me and you get into an argument today and we're not going to hold on to those feelings. I mean,
both of us. You're men. Women hold on to them like they are our purse, and we just bring them and carry them around and show you.
It's one of these. And they buy different purses every week, and it's a different purse.
And this is what else I have.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's one of the strongest arguments that you just put forth for being gay. Right there.
Why? Because gay men carry purses too, though.
So our friends out there, Mark and Matt,
Nick.
Well, that you're selling a product, and I'm starting to buy it a little. Nick, stop. Just stop right now, Mick.
But I don't think you answered the question, Kevin.
I did not answer the question.
You skirted it.
I did because there's a couple things that I've done. You know, I've started to change my perspective on how I view trauma. Mm-hmm. You know, we just went through on Instagram Live the Jocko Willing video, Good. And if you haven't watched it, you need to watch
it. You have to watch it.
Because it changes your mindset. Things are inevitably going to go wrong in your life.
Right.
It's just, that's a fact of life. You know, you don't have enough money to pay the mortgage. Your kid needs braces and they want to get the new Air Force Ones at $120 a pop. Things are going to inevitably go wrong. A lot of it's financial, but not all financial. You need to step back. And I've learned how to take a deep breath and de-escalate myself. And really, my big thing, here's the one thing I've done. I've been able to remove myself from a toxic situation, step back, rethink it, and then re-engage on that topic. Am I successful all the time? 100% no.
Right.
You know? You re-engage on a clearer mindset.
Correct. Because you breathe.
Yeah.
You breathe.
Exactly. So there's been many times when I've needed de-escalation when it comes to dating specifically and other areas. Like even before I came here, I said, oh my God, I had a meltdown with my daughter. I needed to be de-escalated, but then it turned into an escalating event. And then somehow we both needed, she needed to be de-escalated. It was a whole thing because she has ADHD and it was the way I was reacting was escalating her. It was a whole thing. So
then it becomes compounding.
Yeah. It's like
don't we all have ADHD at some point?
Well, so I was just saying this off camera. We do have tendencies, but she has a diagnosis. I mean, thousands of dollars worth of a diagnosis. And just like in case in point, you guys know I have my phone underneath me. And I just got a text message. Oh, thank God. I thought it was her coach.
The show. And that'll be the end of the Suffering Podcast right now. No.
She's got to go.
But so we spoke about this stuff, and those things inevitably will pop up in your life.
Yeah.
It's how you internalize them, how you deal with them. Do you hold grudge? I used to be a big grudge holder, and I still am to some extent, but, you know, I've gotten better at it.
Are you Sicilian? I am.
No. I'm Black Irish.
He's Sicilian-ish.
Yeah. Well, Sicilians, we hold those grudges.
So do Irish.
Okay.
Yeah, it's part of our culture. So thank you so much for sending that question in, Missy Forte, and keep sending in your questions. We will try to get them on the air. So I've been watching a lot of stuff about you.
Yay.
And I'm guessing you're divorced because that's why we're calling this the Suffering of the Divorce Diaries.
15 times.
Believe it or I love that it's the suffering. Well, you know, there's a lot of blood, sweat and tears. I can't even say it. But Divorce Diaries, like literally I've gotten a lot of people that ask me, so are you divorced? Why would I do?
It's a character.
It's a character. I just got married and I want to help those in need.
Yes. Yes. But you're also appealing to 50% of the population by talking about it.
Actually, my manager did this whole thing. It's more than half of America is willing to call it quits, right? We did this whole little pitch for people when we were setting the show. It's actually 67, I think, or 68%. And then I think if you get married again, it's like a higher percentage, like 70% that you're going to get divorced.
Well, you know what cracks me up? Do you ever see these people that get married, they get divorced, and then they remarry each other?
I've seen that. A guy did it three times.
I've seen it too.
One of the comedians said it great. He's like, it's like you go in the refrigerator and you pull the milk out and the milk is bad.
You put it back.
You don't put it back in and check on it 2 weeks later. If it's bad, it's bad.
I could never. I used to say I would never get married again because there's a small 0.01 chance I'd get divorced again. And I don't want to go through that. It was mostly because of my daughter and the custody stuff. And it was just ugly. And I was like, I don't want to go. I would never want to go through this again. But then I've been dating for 8 years and breaking up is hard, too. But it's like a mess.
Dating sucks more than being married sometimes.
It's just a cluster. I had high hopes when I first got divorced. I was like, I'm going to find the real love of my life now. Yeah. I was 33. And it just
Weren't jaded?
I wasn't, which is weird.
Yeah, that's strange.
When I meet men who have been in a long-term relationship, even after the divorce for a long, like, and they get out of it and they meet me and we're, connecting, then they're like, but I just got out of a long-term relationship. Like, what? I was ready. Why can't you be ready?
Well, believe it or not, that this topic has been a topic that we've had trouble getting people in talking about because, look at it this way. So there's usually kids involved.
Right.
And they don't want to.
And legal battles.
And there's legal battles, and they don't want to sit there and say anything negative about their kid's parent. So it's a very tough topic to speak about. openly anyway. You've sort of put it out there for the world to see. So I figure you're safe.
Yes. And thankfully, when I started to create it, it was off the, it was, I was starting right away to create. My ex-husband, you know, he didn't know right away, but as I kept developing the show, he was fine with it. His girlfriend has watched the special, so it's great. And I don't really bash him like I do some of the men that I've dated or caricatures of the men I dated. And I don't want to say bash, like I'm not man bashing, although there are some.
Although now you're going to man bash.
There are some that deserve a good little roast. Okay. And but in all honesty, when I was recording the comedy special that we released on Amazon, I asked him, I said, hey, can I run some of these jokes I'm going to put in the special for Amazon? He's like, I don't care. It's comedy. Hmm. And I was like, you just scored 3 points for yourself because
well, it's theater. You know,
and that's the thing. Comedy is comedy.
Yes.
You know, I mean, political correctness has killed comedy right now.
Yeah.
Because there are certain things you can't talk about, certain things you can't touch.
But the best comedians throughout history have drawn from personal experience.
I mean,
absolutely.
So we were talking before this about Chrissy Teigen. I love him so much because he just goes for it.
Yeah.
What helped me connect with him. And also, like, he loves Latin women. I love Latin men. And I was like, there's a lot of...
So
what I was talking to somebody recently that I was seeing, and that we're not really seeing each other anymore, but we were friends before we started seeing if this would be something. He said to me, he's like, I don't like that I'm in the line of fire. And I was like, oh, that sucks. Like, you've known that I do this. And
am I going to become fodder?
Well, and he was becoming fodder. And so then I was like, I have to figure out how to juggle this, because most of the guys I dated that I poke fun at don't care, or I don't talk to them anymore.
But you know what? Like, the flavor of the week now is Taylor Swift. Because she's dating Travis Kelce.
Yeah.
Right.
And her songs are generally written about, like, her ex-boyfriend.
Taylor Swift, a comedy. Lots of women so everybody's
like, you know, what song is she going to write about him?
Yeah, well, Taylor Swift's a little different. If you're having that many problems with guys, I'm not so sure it's the guy's fault.
I don't think you really know my dating history. I am.
Well, why don't you give our audience a little bit about yourself? Where'd you grow up?
We didn't even start there yet. We just jumped right into it.
I know. Sorry. I tend to veer everybody off task. I grew up in Clifton. My family was born in I was sort of born and raised in Patterson for like a year, and my whole family was from Patterson. And then we just all dispersed. We dispersed.
That's what you do out of Patterson. Sorry. You disperse.
You run. No, I love Patterson still, but my
siblings.
Family, I have multiple siblings, and
we'll just go with multiple.
We'll go with multiple. I'm the only girl, and then I have a very old school Italian Catholic family, loving, supportive. You know, but you know, we shout over each other. We shout through walls. We shout through levels of stairs. You know. Levels of stairs. And I
got the taste of that. So my wife is Italian.
Yeah.
And when I first went to one of her family dinners or holiday dinners, I walked out of there going, Jesus Christ.
You can't hear yourself.
What is going on in my head right now? It's like two little people fighting, you know?
Yeah. I have the joke in my set that my daughter has ADHD, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, or what I like to call being Italian, because, you know, and we're bipolar, because one minute everyone's happy to see you. The next minute, your mother, why would you bring up Rosalie? I haven't talked to her in years. You went to her christening. She didn't call me by my actual name. She said, you know, Frankie instead of Frank. Like, it's nuts. But I very loving family. My parents always told me to kind of go for what I wanted to do in my career, because they kind of didn't. Right. Their life was a little different. They had a family, and for whatever the reasons were for them, their circumstances were, they didn't have that support to go for their dream. Not that they didn't have the support. It was just different times. So me being an actor was a different, you know, I wanted to pursue acting in college, and I did, and they supported that.
It's scary for them.
My dad wanted to be an actor, so he was all for it. He was like Kirk Douglas. Like, he lived through my eyes. He loved it. And my mom, though, was like, you have to have a fallback. She's still kind of like that. She goes, are you really going to be doing this for your whole life?
We talked about that with Derek. If you have a plan B, you don't have a plan A.
Right. That's
the easiest way
to failure.
So I also have a teaching certification, teacher degree. I have a principal certification. So throughout my journey, my ex-husband and I met, and I stopped acting full time, and I went into getting my master's in educational theater. I started a theater company for children with special needs. So I did veer off task when I met my ex-husband. And what I think my background, if this Italian Catholic family, my parents were like love at first sight, love, right? And they still were the day my dad died. I thought the first guy I was going to meet was going to be my husband. And that's how I looked at my relationship with my ex-husband. And it wasn't.
Yeah. It's funny you say that, because in my opening, one of the things I talk about is we're raised a certain way. Every little kid is raised in a nuclear family. Like, this is what life is supposed to be. You're supposed to get married. You're supposed to have kids. You're supposed to get the college.
Two and a half kids and a white picket fence.
Exactly.
Retirement.
And then when that doesn't materialize, you're like, uh-oh.
What am I supposed to do now?
What do I do now?
And it's okay. Like, this is the story of me clunking into my car. That's what my life is. So, like, I trip and fall and everybody's walking in a straight line. But I like that. I like tripping and falling and finding and discovering new things. And it took me to get married and go through those steps and realize, well, I don't know if this was the right person for me. And I felt horrible because I don't.
You invested time into that person.
I invested time in him. He invested time in me. I know that I felt like I let him down to an extent when I decided, like, I don't think this is right. And I stayed for a couple of years more to try to see to work through it. We had a kid, you know, all of those things. When I look at my life now, when I left teaching full time a couple of years ago, and I teach still, but through college, and I teach on the side. So it's like I'm able to perform full time. And
all you're doing is. So actually, Joe Rogan puts this perfectly, yeah, where he says, whatever you're doing is a means to get to where you want to be. It doesn't have to be what, you know, how you're making money or how you're supporting yourself.
Yeah.
That's not what your goal. Your goal is to get to wherever it may be.
Yeah.
And filling a void?
I think it's support. Like, you know, as much as I do like my day job, I'd rather do this full time.
Oh, right. So I love teaching and helping kids through the arts, and I'm able to like act in the classroom with them. But when I decided to leave, I was like, this, no matter how much more money I can make as a principal and easier and teaching and all this other stuff, I am not going to be feeling like I'm fulfilling my personal legend unless I go back to acting full time. Have you ever read The Alchemist?
Of course.
Right. So that's how I felt. And I also feel like so many people give up because you're so close to obtaining that goal or that journey. And also, you know what? It's part of me is like, would you want to go the other way? And I'm like, no.
Well, it's like this. So it's right here. And you can sort of put your fingertips on it, but you can't grab it, mm-hmm, yet. And you know, if you just hang on just a second longer, mm-hmm, you'll get it.
Compound pounding.
But you know, you know what? Sure. I mean, if you're, I know you said you love teaching and all that, and that could be a lifestyle and could be very lucrative for you and everything else. But
making sure
we're always told when you do something you love doing,
you do it better.
You never work a day in your life.
You never work a day in your life. And also, I used to have some of those when I used to direct my students in musicals. And we would get done with the performance, and I remember this one musical I did on stage with it at this elementary school. My daughter was a part of it. It was called Polka Dots. It was based off of we did a whole collab with Broadway Licensing because the vice president was one of the parents. It was the Beatles song. They had Beat Bugs on Netflix, and we did the musical. Broadway Licensing worked with us in the school district I worked for. I'm telling you, people were crying in the audience. My ex-in-laws were there, like, crying. My parents were there crying. My ex-husband was like, I was like, what? And they were like, one of the paraprofessionals came up to me and she's like, you are doing what God told you to do. And I was starting to cry. And I took a walk with my ex-husband and I said, I'm going back to acting full time. I'm going to cry here thinking about this. I wasn't expecting that today. I said, I'm going back to acting full time next year. And I need you to put our daughter on your health insurance because this is where he's like, and he like gave me no problem. Didn't say anything like he did it. So I was like,
he gets to claim the taxes. That's why.
Oh, damn it. Yeah. Well, either way, I was like, this is the journey. I can always teach. I can always do that. I can always fulfill that giving back feeling. But, you know, I performed Divorce Diaries. I wrote the pilot and doing all, you know, we're trying to get into the TV series, doing all these different things with the show. I'm a host on a show called What's Up New York now. That is like everything I was striving for.
It's your passion.
It's one of my 20s. Right. Exactly. Yeah.
It's so much fun there's parts I love about the entertainment business, mm-hmm, and then there's parts I really don't like about the entertainment, mm-hmm, business, like Puerto Rican producers. No good.
Really?
Wepa.
Wepa. Yeah. Boricua.
Yeah. See, he chimes in from time to time. We try to mute his mic.
I didn't know he was Puerto Rican. All right.
FYI, I'm also from Patterson. So it kind
of. Oh, yeah, so look at Patterson representing.
He does extra work on the side for Adrian Brody, just so you know.
Oh, all right.
So,
Yeah.
That's
good. So you get married, you find the love of your life, and when did things start slowly going downhill?
Honestly, six months into our marriage, it started going south because I could feel I was having a crush, or feeling like I was having a crush towards a few other men that were coming in and out, and that's normal. But when for a long time, I used to suppress who I was because I thought I wasn't supposed to be that way with a boyfriend. And it wasn't so much my ex-husband's fault or anything like that. I think who he was and who I was, that might not have
maybe the idea of marriage sounded better.
I was going to say your parents' love at first sight. Do you think that was supposed to be you
then? Yeah. A big thing. Yeah. Also, his insecurities were making me feel like I wasn't doing certain things. Not to put him down, but there were certain things. He was like, are you going to be making out with guys in these movies? And then I got, oh, should I not be doing that? And then eventually he's like, no, I don't care. I just won't watch it. But then it was stuck in my head. So my own stupid OCD was like, I have to shift myself. And I definitely changed who I was. I was a very flirty, sexual person, sensual person with people. I took a lot of my male friends out of my life, which was dumb. I distanced myself from a lot of people. So all those shifts I made to myself, when you say to your girlfriend, oh, I'm never going to change when I have a boyfriend. And I changed. Yeah. And then it resulted in me wanting to burst out of my own skin, having crushes, thinking of having thoughts about another man when I'm with my husband. And I was like, this is not good. And I tried really hard, tried to push through it. And I just realized eventually, I'm like, I'm not happy. I'm really unhappy. And this isn't the relationship for me. And, you know, that did not sit well with him either eventually.
Yeah, I can see how he would have a problem with that.
Yes.
You know, coming from a guy's standpoint, I don't think I'd be too happy with that either.
But I think, right, exactly. And then he made choices in his behavior that resulted in like, how he was reacting from emotions. I was trying to saying we have to end this. We're not happy, period. Eventually, what brought us back together on a better speaking term was once we got divorced, we knew their parents. One of his brothers passed, and it really did bring us all on speaking terms again, in even his family. So it's unfortunate that one death brings you, you know, the death of your marriage breaks you guys apart.
Sometimes.
Then the death brings you together. I knew, I told his mom too, when we were going to divorce, I'm like, everything's going to be okay. She was upset. She goes, you guys are splitting up. And she's like, she left my family. They loved being apart. So I said, look, it's going to be okay. What if he ends up with somebody and they're happy? And he is. He's with someone. I'm pretty sure they're going to get married at some point. And I couldn't be more happier for him because I couldn't give him that. And I felt horrible inside.
But you got this wonderful child out of it.
We have a beautiful child. And that's what the goal was. Sure, I can go to the other.
Stuff went wrong. Good. You got this good child out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's important. Like, people forget that. People become very short-sighted when they, you know, the kids don't ask to be born. So people become very short-sighted that they don't like each other. They're starting to hate each other. Mm-hmm. The children are just there watching all this, learning this, absorbing all this.
And where does that put it into the kid's psyche for when the kid gets older,
right?
You know,
which is,
you know, my parents were arguing every day, you know, and
all right.
You know, like I said, your parents were,
well, they were arguing every day too.
Yeah, but they
and also threatening divorce, but they loved each other. They would also like make out in the kitchen. It was gross,
but it was love at first sight. So if your husband are arguing every day, you're going to instill that in your kid also.
100%. Yeah.
Yeah.
My daughter doesn't know us together. So she was 20 months when I left the house. When I said, I'm going to leave and moving out, I had to write a letter. I have to tell him, you know, because he doesn't want to. If you don't tell, my lawyer said, you have to tell him that you're leaving. As long as he doesn't say anything where you can't go, you can go. But I will say, I feel like I'm in. It brought me back to my identity. People don't like to hear that. Oh, divorce brought you back to who you were. What did you get married for? Because I did believe in us. I wanted to have a family with him. I don't regret anything. I think we needed to happen.
You can't put a round peg in a square hole. No. And that's what it sounds. That's what it sounds like to me. I don't know your ex-husband. I don't know the nature of your relationship.
100%. I think his partner now is definitely, they fit. And it's not that we didn't fit. I think we fit for the time being. And then I feel like the relationship ended and we kept going.
If you don't mind me, how old were you when you got married?
We 26, 27, actually 27. So it's not super young, but we were together since I was 23. Young,
but times change and attitudes change as you get older.
Oh yeah. Especially in your 20s. People think they have to get, that's where I was I still don't know what I'm doing.
Listen, 41. I'm 57. I don't know what I'm doing tomorrow.
So exactly. And I feel like you change, especially in your 20s. I feel like if anything, you're more equipped to get settled down in your mid 30s because you sort of know. But even then, it's all a case by case.
Okay. Well, and that's why I say all the time, marriage should be a 3-year contract.
I've heard this
and have
one
a re-up,
before.
Right? Like yeah. a state police.
Like a lease?
You got to re-up it every 3 years.
So state police have that's to actually re-sign every 5 years?
Yeah, I think it's 5.
They got to re-sign every 5 years. And every and there's a big joke, like they you go to sign the paper and then they pull it out of you. They pull it out from underneath you.
I like that idea only because...
You could use that in your show, too.
Okay, here's a lease. But I will be honest with you. I still have, because of what my parents, their love and that example, and also the relationship I have with my dad, who was my, like, the expectation of what men should do for you is like from help from my dad. I haven't had that. And in a relationship with a guy, and I feel like it's harder to find it, especially with people like I tend to connect with the men who are, they like me, we have chemistry. And then it's like, they forget about me when I'm out of their sight. It's kind of like they live on an island. We have a lot of fun on the island. And then when I go away from the island.
Take the boat away from the island.
They take the boat away and I don't even have a life jacket to get back into the shark infested waters.
In retrospect, is there any vision or any scenario where you could have made it work with your ex-husband?
No.
No. Well,
that was quick into the point.
I say no.
That's honestly one of the most straightforward answers I could ever get from that, because most of the time when people got divorced, well, they could have done this and I could have done this. And there's some regret and rebuke in
yeah,
there.
Absolutely not. I don't say that to be mean to him. I think we would have still ended up in the same route. There's a musical called If Then, and it's about the woman who's getting divorced. And they take you to two different scenarios, and both of the scenarios, the different choices she makes in her life, both things still happen. She gets her career and she gets the child she wanted. So with the man that she was supposed to be with. And in one of the scenarios, she gets divorced, but she married the wrong guy. So she still ends up in the same path. So I still feel like regardless of what could have been shifted, we still would have ended.
But now you're in a world and you're in a life that is so scary because, you know, you put all your time and you invest all this of yourself into this relationship and the relationship ends.
Yeah.
And now you're out in no man's land.
I mean, I was like,
literally no man's land.
I wasn't really scared. I was like, da, 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 da.
Did you have a, but you had a plan, but now you got to execute your plan.
My plan was scary. First of all, this is why I like to say, no matter how hard it was when I was going through it, I still wanted to get divorced. I still thought I was the happily ever after still existed. I thought I was going to have to file for bankruptcy. We were doing a short sale of my home. My first lawyer said, you might have to file for bankruptcy. My daughter had not started talking yet. She was almost 2 years old. She had evaluation for, she had to get early intervention services. They thought she might be on the spectrum. She didn't test. She tested not conclusive. It was hell. And I was moving back home with my parents, my 92-year-old grandmother, and my handicapped dog, who got hit by a car while I was arguing with my ex-husband. So
that is a book right there.
As hard, the divorce.
How many more adjectives you want to add on?
I can add, right. So, and then
well, my handicapped more, dog that got hit by a car.
I can't talk about it on air. And he did. It was a horrible. It was a year before that he got hit by the car while I was arguing with him, and he ran out to the front. He was barking at somebody. He got hit by the car. And I thought to myself, well, if we can't make it work because of the dog, we really can't make it work. And we couldn't. So there were so many things that I said, I still was happier because I had the support of my family. My yeah. parents really supported me in my decision and helped me through it. And my daughter, I had to. I knew there was a light at the end of the tunnel. I wanted to get back to what I'm doing now and feeling fulfilled. I feel, even though there's ups and downs as an entrepreneur, as an actor, you know, you feel scared all the time about certain things, but then there's also that joy. And anyway.
But the fear is actually, a lot of people are drawn to that fear, that anxiety, because there's a little bit of an adrenaline rush in there.
Those are the guys that like me and date me and yeah. then run away.
But isn't self-fulfillment the path to happiness?
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? I think so. And I also think if you, you really look at it like we're here for, you know, this is a bigger picture. We're here for a short amount of time. You know, the people you've lost, the things that you don't and you can't control what's going to happen tomorrow. God forbid. Oh, my God.
Oh, you really are Italian.
I'm very Italian.
With that word, God forbid. Do you cross your fingers when you say it?
I said actually a couple of rosaries on the way here to my daughter had a good night in gymnastics.
She looked in and said, Managgia fenabla.
Yes. And like, But I also am very spiritual where I pray and I meditate and I like to ask for signs that my dad's around or that this is going to happen or something's, you know. So if I didn't have that, I wouldn't feel as my faith in what's out there beside just here.
But you're telling a tale that you weren't so much looking for the greener grass. You were actually looking for just a lawn to spread out in.
Yeah.
You know, because where you were, that doesn't seem like anything was growing.
It was dark and it was isolated. I was alone. I was very sad.
Right.
I remember watching Watch What Happens Live. Jenny McCarthy was on. They were like, how do you stay so looking young and fun? And she was like, great sex and yoga. And I remember going, am I always going to be miserable? I just remember.
And Botox. And
I'm sure. Yes. But like, it's actually Divorce Diaries won best screenplay on the film festival that she sponsored. Side note. Isn't that weird? And like, when I watched her on Watch What Happens Live, I had an aha moment. It's one of the aha moments I can put my finger on thinking, what am I doing?
Well, there's no chance meetings.
Right. It's like, you know, and yeah, so.
So how did you start to rebuild? Because if you're getting back into acting.
Yes.
You didn't go back into acting and say, I'm going head first into the divorce genre.
No, so I just immediately, I never stopped acting. I just was doing it part-time. And no matter where I was as a teacher, I was always finding opportunities for my students to perform on stages with New Jersey theaters or projects. So I had a one-woman show called How to Be a Successful Teacher that went to United Solo Festival in New York City at Theater Row Studios. I always was creating. So I took that one-woman structure, and I had done one-woman shows before in college, and I was starting to create Divorce Diaries. I kept saying Divorce Diaries when I was home with my family, and I was like, this is unreal. And then I started to do the new work series at Emerging Artist Theater in New York, just popping in, creating. You can sign up to do these new work series. You have to get accepted in, but because of my background and doing one-woman shows, I would get in, and it would be an opportunity for me to perform. Bless you.
Cut that one out.
put it in the highlight reels.
I never stopped writing or creating even when I was married. So that never stopped. But I was pushing the gas pedal more when I got divorced. I started doing, I wanted to go back to doing improv. I had done improv at UCB for a couple of years when I was in my 20s. I wanted to go back to it. I had some friends doing stand-up comedy.
The best improv scene in the world, I think it's Ted 2,
yeah,
where they go to the improv theater and Mark Wahlberg and the teddy bear sitting in the back. And he's like, give me an event, 9/11. And he's like, no. They just keep skirting the issue. Well, give me a person, Robin Williams. And then he said, well, give me a person at a place, Robin Williams at 9/11. And they start hammering this poor guy. Yeah. But improv is a tough world because you really got to be quick.
And I loved it. When I was at UCB in that short time, I was like having the time of my life. And I stopped when I started dating my ex-husband. And again, not his fault, but that's when I was like, oh, shell. And I couldn't get into an improv class, so I took a stand-up class. I was dating a cop at the time. I broke up with him. And
good move.
He broke up with me, I'm not going to lie. And then I stayed at his house for 2 hours, pretty much begging him to reconsider.
Oh, you were in Alanis Morissette song. That's what you were.
I was. And then I was like, I mean, I use sex. I use I love you, everything. I mean, we're still friendly. We had sex a year ago, actually. So I feel like we rekindled something. Now he has a girlfriend, but that's fine. So he's
had a girlfriend for 2 years, but you had sex with him later.
No, he actually is in the pilot, his character, and he watched it. And he was very much gung-ho for me creating, which I appreciated. So he inspired me to go to stand-up because I was trying to heal from the breakup. It was really hurting. I'm not going to lie. I was like, I'm going to do a stand-up show. I'm going to show him the material I do. I'm going to send it to him, and we're going to get back together. That was the freaking goal. And it worked. clicked a little bit, and then we stopped talking again for a little bit. But
so I guess the show wasn't that good.
No, I kind of showed up at his house. That was another story.
With a video. Here's the show I did about you.
He liked the show. It was me demanding more attention. So, but that's okay. It's not something you should do. You should roll up to a Puerto Rican cop who was, you know, raised in the streets and say, "Hey, I need more attention. My sunglasses back."
Well, you have a certain personality to you. And this first time we met face to face, you have a personality where you are very... You're high energy. You really are high energy.
I was going to say vibrant.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
And it does. I will tell you this. Some people, it scares a lot of people. I'm sorry to.
No, I just love that you're being honest, because like some people are like, it's so great. And I can sometimes see some men are like,
you're like, whoa.
Michelle, you're too intense. I mean, I don't think I can meet your expectations. I'm like, well, get a fucking shoehorn. Sorry. Oh, because like, I messed up the joke. One guy said to me, he's like, I can't fill the shoes of your expectations. And I was like, get a shoehorn. Figure it out. You're freaking 55.
We just walk into a room, go.
So this is something I do in my set. I said, I'm so high strung. You won't know if you'll have to take a Xanax or a line of Coke to keep up with me. Because I am. The thing is, I've never done drugs in my life. And I am. Like, I tried weed in college and I was like, I'm not into it.
But you didn't inhale.
I don't even know what I did. I was drunk and I was like, I don't know what happened. Even now, people are like, you should really smoke. You need to calm down. I'm like, no, I like who I am, even though it's a lot.
Well, we've had people in here that have partaken before the show. It scares the hell out of me because.
Recently.
Because I like that you're sharp. You're sharp.
Right.
Like,
you got to be on point.
You're very sharp. You being in the creative field like that. Me personally, I think it would dull you.
I have, when I first started doing stand-up and divorce stories, I'd always bring like a glass of wine with me on stage. I never drink at work. And I never drank at work before, but when I would do stand-up, everyone has a glass of wine. I was like, no, I don't need to drink at my job because I'm not better comic.
It doesn't like calm you down before you go on show, or you're just naturally high strung.
It throws me off as an...
But it's a prop, right?
But I know that when I started doing it and we just drinking, it was before I'd have a glass before. Sometimes when you're at these comedy clubs, people are drinking. And I know when I wasn't like really, I was trying it out, or at open mic, I'd have a beer because you have to buy a drink minimum, whatever they do. It never made me a stronger performer. So I always say, this is my job now. So I don't take any chances unless someone's like, you need to have a glass of wine. This is your sponsor. Then I'll hold it on stage. I only bring water or tea because especially with divorce stories, I talk and some of the parts I sing for an hour and more, hour and 15, actually. So my vocal cord, it would just ruin it. But I know comedians, I mean, look at Dave Chappelle, you know, like look at these comedians that go on stage and they're okay. It's not for me.
But there's some comedians out there that say that they're drinking like Jack Daniel's straight up and it's iced tea in a glass because it's the same color.
So do you ever watch that movie about the Rat Pack? And I think it was Ray Liotta, and they're going up through the floors and they got like Sammy Davis Jr. with his wife and then Frank Sinatra with whatever girl he's with. And there's Dean Martin, who on stage was the biggest drunk. He was the biggest drunk on stage, but he's in his bed alone drinking a glass of milk.
Because it was
all a prop. It was all a show.
Yeah.
You know, because you're funnier. Look at Foster Brooks. And if you don't know Foster Brooks.
Yes.
Foster Brooks just acted drunk the whole time.
They said Foster Brooks never drank in his life either. Yeah.
But so in my role as an actor, like, or my background as an actor, I never would drink before a play or a film. So that's how I look at it. Now, that's not maybe the way for other people. But for me, I want to wait till after the show and have a nice glass of wine because I feel more in control. And I never got into weed. I never got into it. A lot of people think I should. I'm like, it just throws me off of who I am.
Now, has the divorce diaries and speaking about it and letting it out, has that helped you organize your path with your life a little bit better?
100%. It's brought me back to my life. It's like this is like Simba and this is like, for me, I'm the circle of life kind of thing. Like it's always going to be a second child. It's going to be my, and you know what? It's a great name. I want it to be a TV series. I've done so much work copywriting. It's insane. And you get people who kind of have similar names or similar things. And I start to have anxieties about it. I'm like, Michelle, whatever it is, if it's divorce diaries or Michelle's diaries, it's this story about your life and how you create the humor is going to keep going. So just keep swimming. Just keep freaking doing it.
Is there going to be a divorce diaries reality tour?
I will do whatever people pitch. I have a reality show pitched for it.
I went on the Seinfeld reality tour.
Really?
I did. I met with run by Kenny Kramer in New York City. Who was it? Was it Dom Irrera? Sitting there? He was just sitting there and they gave you a little fun size Snickers bar at the end. They took you to Monk's, the coffee shop. This is where George's car was parked when the hooker was using it.
The car that he bought from the actor John Voight.
The soup Nazi.
They showed where the soup Nazi was. But one of the funniest things is there's an episode in Seinfeld where George buys the stuff from China to grow hair.
Yes, I remember.
And Kramer is filming it. And that's a real thing.
Oh.
So Kenny Kramer had one of those shoulder pack VHS things. And he's filming Larry David's head because they lived across the hall from each other. And he's filming the top of his head. And Kenny Kramer showed this in this little theater.
And oh, my God.
Yeah, it was all a real thing. So when you're talking about the divorce diaries, because it's your life, obviously theatricalized.
Yeah.
If that's a word. I just made that up. I'm going to.
Theatricalized. We make it. It's owned. It's you got it.
Write that down.
Theatricalized. I'm not going to be able to pronounce it again, so I'm going to let that one go. But, you know, your best comedy, I said it before, your best comedy is going to come from life experience. Seinfeld, probably one of the most successful TV shows ever lived.
Right.
Why? Because it was his life.
It's off the cuff.
Well, someone says, oh, you're like the female Seinfeld, but you're a TV series idea. It is, but it's also like, it's more of a curb. Like, you follow me in a day-to-day life, and it's like, these situations have happened in the pilot, right? And then now I created a 6-episode season one, but now we haven't gotten an investor. So I have this web series that I'm working on with my sponsor, right? I have a coffee sponsor.
I saw that.
Solid State Coffee in New York City. You can get it at solidstatecoffee.com. Bloop. I haven't really announced. Well, by the time this is out, we will have filmed. Knock on wood again. The Catholic's coming out. We have filmed for the web series. Very short episodes to go on my YouTube channel and maybe submit them to film festivals. But the concept of my life continuing, right?
But Curb Your Enthusiasm is a perfect analogy because that's all improv.
Yeah,
it's absolutely. It is scripted, but a lot of it in the pilot, you'll see a lot of it. My director's like, half of this is not in here, Michelle. I was like, I don't know. But there's a lot of improv actors I worked with too on the pilot. And it's also the if you know how to play the game of the scene and we know what each character is looking for, the perfect mom, head of the PTO, emailing you 500 times a day. And then like emails you again with your name in red, like I am working lady, you know, stuff like that. Or, you know, the dating the men with special needs thing where, no, they don't have actual physical disabilities or emotional disabilities, but they are allergic to being with me in public. So you'll see that. And in the pilot, you see me. There's a line that the principal says in the show, and it's called Mark Primiano plays the principal. And he says, I'm sorry. He's on the phone. He goes, this woman just walked into my office. This is chaos in the form of a woman. Oh, that's what he said. He said chaos in the form of a woman. That was not a written line. He improvised it. And he's a Groundlings member. He was a Groundlings member. So yes, Curb Your Enthusiasm meets like Bridget Jones's Diary.
But the funny thing is when they improv like that, how do you keep a straight face? Because you know that's not in the line.
It's
not in the script. But they improv like that. It's hysterical.
It's hard when you're working with friends you find really funny too. And but it's also amazing because, you know, it's like, oh, this is going to be great. And sure enough, then you have we had some real life teachers in the confessionals of talking about like, what is wrong with her? Like, and it was very authentic to connect that piece because my life as a teacher, people thought I was on the outskirts as a theater teacher, rolling a cart around as a divorced mom who couldn't get it together for school. With, you know,
you've taken a different route, but in essence, you've done what our show's about. You've taken an event in your life, which not many people would say it's happy, although it seems like you've had a good experience.
You've had a great divorce.
Yeah.
You know, and thank God she started Divorce Diaries after she was divorced.
Yeah.
You know, you hate to start that while you're married.
That would have been funny.
Should have been the divorce oxymoron or something like that. But, you know, you take an event and you build off of that event. And you take the strength that you pull the pieces, you dissect it for everybody else to see.
That's really what the show is about. It's really about self-love and in acceptance. And it really, when you look at these characters in the show, right, like they're married, they're single, they're divorced, but everyone has some sort of issue with themselves that they can't accept. And it's about finding the love within yourself. That's really the message of the show. And, you know, obviously when I tour with the one woman with the live show, it's the message when I'm doing my stand up. I do improv too, where everyone gets to write a line to their ex. And then I act it out in a monologue to your ex. It's a lot of fun. But
yeah. When's it come out?
So the pilot's been circulating film festivals. And if you have anybody at Netflix that's willing to take my call. No, I have been pitching it for the last year and a half.
We just happened to know somebody.
Really?
Yeah. We know we've been doing this show for 3 years and we've come across some crazy people.
We had Billy Bob Netflix on here.
Really? Yeah.
No, actually, one of the guys who has a little hookup is Seth Ferranti.
Yeah, Seth.
Who wrote White Boy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, we should talk. Yeah. So the pilot has won a bunch of awards at the film festival. I shot it on I raised money to shoot it. Did the whole indie filmmaker thing. And then I signed with a producer. We tried to get an investor and it just didn't land. We haven't got an investor yet. So the other route I'm taking now is to build more content in a short form to get people's attention to it. I have people interested in it, but have had nobody say, sure, here's the money in the production company. So
this is a hit.
But it takes one of those viral things and that's it.
That's the goal with some of the short form content. But yeah, any networking, communicating, and just the touring of the show. So I'm really hoping that, you know, tomorrow.
It could happen. So last week we had a gentleman in here by the name of JC Capone. Yes. Mm-hmm. JC he was diagnosed with Parkinson's, mm-hmm. which is awful, right?
Yeah.
But he started putting these little motivational videos on trying to get himself out of his own darkness. Right. Sure enough. Somebody calls him for a movie and his, by the time this airs that it'll be out, it's called Reptile. It's on Netflix with Benicio del Toro, Justin Timberlake, Alicia Silverstone. And he's in it.
Yeah.
He's in it. And he's an amazing human being. So
I was listening to that episode.
And it was just a chance thing because the producer of the movie saw him
doing the video.
Saw his videos and said, Branch Singer. And JC turned him down a couple times.
Yeah, he's like, stop calling me. I'm not the right person.
Wow.
Yeah.
So
chance meet, like Kevin said before, nothing happens by chance.
No, I mean,
every time there's a meeting, there's a reason behind that.
When the Suffering Podcast gets on Netflix, we'll have you on again.
I would love that. Any opportunity. I mean, listen, if you need a co-producer, I'm here. I will take it. Just kidding.
She did say she dates Hispanic guys or whatever.
Yeah, there you go.
You have to deal with his wife, Kathy. So where can our audience find you? Why don't you give out some social media links? I want to drive everybody to Divorce Diaries because I've watched some of your stuff and I think you're hilarious. Except you wear Yankees hat, which I don't like.
Oh no! Please tell me, what are you?
I'm a Philly fan.
Okay, well, as long as you're not a Mets fan.
No, I'm not a Mets fan.
He doesn't like baseball.
Well, you're a Central South Jersey guy, right?
I grew up in South Jersey.
Okay, so you're South Jersey. Okay, so don't listen to the joke I have when you come to the show.
Well, you're playing right around the corner from where I live.
Yes. So, big thing is they can go to divorcediaryshow.com. That's divorcediaryshow.com. That's divorcediaryshow.com.
Well, there will be a lower third right below your arm.
We'll give you a lower third.
DivorceDiaryShow.com. You can also, that will have all of my platforms. So I'm on every single platform you can think of.
Mm-hmm. It's exhausting, isn't it?
It's exhausting. But I like creating. So Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, the whole nine yards, MichelleTrina.com too. They're pretty much the same website, but MichelleTrina.com and or DivorceDiaryShow.com. And I'm doing a show in Jersey. That's October 28th. It's my birthday show, turning 24.
Again,
thank you. I'm just doing the flip of the round of the numbers, but I hope you guys can make it at Comedy Dojo East, and then I'm going to be out in California the week before, October 21st and October 22nd.
October 28th?
Yes, Comedy Dojo in Mars Plains.
Yeah, it's his restaurant.
We've been there before,
and we're going to introduce you to our good friend Roro Antonucci.
Well, no. let's plan it.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what we did with Roro. Mike took his girlfriend. I took my wife. We all went out to the comedy show. It's literally right around that corner from my house.
Oh, then you have to come, please.
We'll definitely be there. That'll be great.
Good.
Be
thank you. Yes. Selling your tickets as a comedian, and like we were saying, I was like, it never stops. No matter how big you get, you always are like, what's the numbers?
We've made connections. So in 2 weeks, we have the headlining comedian from Roro's show, a guy named Larry Bea. His Instagram handle is he is hysterical, which I used to call hysterical. But I couldn't figure out that it said he is hysterical.
Kevin was like going back to his Jewish days. Hysterical.
But he's coming in because he tours. He's open for Kevin Hart. I mean, he's
Wow.
So, but that's the amazing thing with
what you're doing
and what we do here is you make connections. Like you meet people, and even if nothing comes out of it, you really have those good relationships built.
You do, and I feel like the entertainment industry, it's like it's more like two people, and you're connected to somebody else. Now, that works sometimes in negative way for me when I date somebody in the industry, and then like I roast the heck out of them. That turns to somebody. And, you know, then
sometimes 6 degrees will make you succeed.
Yeah, that's true.
But you know what? On what's it? October 28th, you said?
October 28th.
When Kevin and I show up, don't look at us and say, like, who the fuck are these two guys?
Yeah.
No.
Do we have to wear a Suffering Podcast shirt so she knows who we are?
Yeah, with our picture with on our it, picture like a bunch of jerks.
I will be messaging you.
You know, we should give her.
Are you coming?
We should give her a shirt and maybe she'll wear it on stage that night.
Oh, 100% I will. 100% I will.
Oh, yeah. Of course we will.
100% I will.
Well, thank you so much for coming in here.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I mean, your outlook and your attitude is, it's just, like I said before, vibrant. I mean, you really are.
You really are.
Although there is a lot of suffering with what you went through.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you this. We need, Mike and I need shows like this with somebody with your attitude towards life to really, because we get some really dark episodes in here, but it's nice it's almost like a breath of fresh air for us.
Oh, good. Mom, did you hear that? I'm making someone smile.
Making two people smile. Maybe three. Andrew's behind the glass. I think he's smiling, but I don't know.
So we're coming to the end of this thing. Okay. And I ask the same question every time. You know, you've gone through all this stuff. And although you seem to come out pretty good on the other side.
Right.
This suffering that you've went through has to have taught you something in order for it to be value. What do you think it's taught you?
Patience. As much as I still don't have it, I'm working on it. I think that's the one thing that sticks out is patience and just keep going. Don't stop. I think that the stopping is your Achilles heel if you stop. Simple as that.
Keep going. I love that.
Keep going.
I love that.
Be patient to be patient. Because, you like you said, you're trying to be patient, but you're not there yet.
I have had to
You got to be patient in order to get your patience.
To be de-escalated to be patient all the time.
Well, thank you so much for coming
thank
in
so
tonight.
Thank you so much for having me.
And that's going to do it for this episode of The Suffering Podcast, The Suffering of the Divorce Diaries with Michelle Trainin. Let's think about all the stuff that we learned. When time gets tough, say good. What you're doing is to get you where you want to be. Sometimes 6 degrees will make you succeed. You don't need a partner in order to be happy, but most importantly, keep going. That's going to do it for this episode. Go to popple.com for a digital business card. Put in the code TSP20 for a 20% discount. Follow us on all social media. That's Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, Clapper.
OnlyFans.
Follow Mike at Mike_Fillets. Follow me at Real Kevin Donaldson. And of course, follow The Suffering Podcast. And we'll see you on the next episode.